What's up, fellas? Welcome back to Commas Over Cold Brew with me, your host, Emma Abrahamson. Today we're talking to Kyle Merber, and I was really excited to have him on because I think he brings a great perspective to the entire sport of running. He is quite the character on Twitter, and I think that's really where his personality shines. That's kind of where I first knew of him, which he'd probably get mad at me for saying, but he was also a very good runner, as you'll learn in this episode. He has run a 352 miles, so he recently retired and got a 9-to-5 job, and then also started a newsletter called The Lap Count, which is literally the only place I ever go get my information on the running world, like whatever's going on in the running world. I go to The Lap Count every Wednesday. He releases a new newsletter in your inbox. It's completely free. So I highly recommend you guys go subscribe. Anyway, in this episode, we talk about life as 9-to-5ers and what life is like after competitive running. And I think we give two different perspectives, which is very interesting because I feel like a lot of the time you kind of hear the same story, but it's fun just to, you know, go back and forth on everyone's experiences after competitive running. So I hope you guys enjoyed today's episode. Stay tuned. Okay, we have some super awesome news. You know that it is the beginning of October, and that means that pumpkin spice season is upon us. Never wanted to miss out on a good trend. Craze Foods, my brand, yes, a little bit of self-promotion here, has just released our own pumpkin spice high-protein iced coffee. It's actually my favorite flavor yet, I will say. I love the chocolate mocha, but the pumpkin spice hits different, especially this time of year, and the product is the highest quality in the market. Replace your morning Starbucks run with our high-protein iced coffee for a smooth start to the day. 21 grams of protein and real coffee, so you get about the same kick as from an actual cup of coffee. It's something that I throw in with a scoop of almond milk right after my workout, and I eat a piece of fruit on the side. It's a perfect way to just get in really good protein after a workout. 88 calories, 21 grams of protein, and it just tastes so amazing. You get that little boost of caffeine too. There's literally nothing like it in the morning. Also, the product is 100% all natural. Most of the other options at the market are sweetened with sucralose or other artificial flavors, but not us. We're sweetened with monk fruit and stevia, with your pumpkin kick coming from cloves, allspice, cinnamon, ginger, and nutmeg. Not to mention, it's 100% grass-fed whey isolate, which is the best protein you can get, by the way, and real coffee. If you love that flavor, highly recommend the chocolate mocha as well, because I absolutely love that one too, of course, and that is a fan favorite. It's available on Amazon right now if you just search Craze Foods, and I'll have it linked in the podcast description, but I highly recommend you go try the pumpkin spice. It's so good, and let me know what you guys think. Craze Foods, simple ingredients and delicious products. Today's episode is also brought to you by Inside Tracker. When you do what you love, like running, like racing, like enjoying the great outdoors, you want to do it for life. Inside Tracker can help. Inside Tracker was founded in 2009 by leading scientists in aging, genetics, and biometrics. Using their patented algorithm, Inside Tracker analyzes your body's data to provide you with a clear picture of what's going on inside you and to offer you science-backed recommendations for positive diet and lifestyle changes. Then Inside Tracker tracks your progress every day, every step of the way towards reaching your performance goals and living a longer, healthier life. For a limited time, you can get 25% off the entire Inside Tracker store. Just go to insidetracker.com/Emma. That is insidetracker.com/Emma. Or you can click the link in the description, because change is an inside job and it's time for you to get started. Now let's get straight into today's episode. Hey, Kyle, I'm excited to have you on. I'm sure we're gonna have a lot to talk about, so let's get straight into it. Do you want to just tell us a little bit about yourself, give us a little rundown of who you are and what you're about?
Where do I even begin? Sum up my entire life in 30 seconds. So I guess ran track and field professionally after graduating for 7 years and did okay with that. I guess I ran 352 for the mile and then didn't make the Olympics, and during COVID decided to hang it up. And now I'm just, a normal person who really likes track and is trying to promote it any way possible.
I am so curious as to what the last year of your life has been like, because I am also a retired runner. I also did not make it to the Olympics and I didn't even make it to the professional level. So you lasted longer than I did, but I'm intrigued about your transition period from being a full-time pro runner to now you have a 9-to-5, and you're still doing some running little content stuff on the side.
Yeah, we can talk all about that. So, you know, the pandemic hit when I was in full swing of build up, thinking I was going for the trials in 2020. And my reaction was I just didn't slow down. I didn't buy into it. I was like, no, the trials are still going to happen. I'm going to have to still train as hard as I can. And after like a couple months, I realized that that was not the case. That was not what was going to happen. Life was changing. And so initially, my contract was ending, and I had accepted the fact that I probably would have to get a job and work part time and still like chase the dream running and do both. And then as I like continued to explore jobs and think about what I wanted to do, I realized that I didn't actually want to run anymore. It was kind of just this obligation of like, well, I have to go into like my third trials. But I didn't really like, I wasn't going to make the team. I knew it. I wasn't running well enough. And I just had kind of had enough. I was a little burnt out on competing at that point. And so like as I'm applying for jobs, I'm like thinking, how can I do both? Like I eventually gave up on that and was like, no, like let's
Yeah.
just work and then stop running professionally.
Now that you have a job, do you like give a lot more credit to people that work full time and also run professionally? Because I mean, now that I have like the set 9 to 5, I don't know how people do it. I really don't.
Okay. Yeah. Hot take. I think depending on what your job is, it's just super doable.
Okay, what do you mean?
I could completely run professionally right now or like at a high level if I wanted.
Really? Why?
Yeah, because the work from
How?
home makes it so easy.
Yeah, but it's just like it's tiring.
Is tiring that but I guess I'm naturally an early riser. Like I wake up at 6 every day, no matter what. So theoretically, I have at least 2 hours every day that if I wanted to in the mornings, I could go to the track and run. And maybe I wouldn't have the ability to, meet up with as many people and do all of the little things. But, if I wanted to go to the track and run a workout in the morning and then jog 30 minutes in the evening, I definitely could.
Okay, yeah, that is, I mean, that definitely makes sense. For me, I'm not an early morning workout person. So the fact of like waking up in the fives and then having
Yeah.
to like rip it on the track immediately and then like run back home and like get all like you're all sweaty and then you have to like change into your work clothes and then just work for 8 hours and sit there like this typing on your computer. I just feel
Yeah.
like it's just so different than, I don't know what I was doing in college. Like, I just feel like I
Yeah.
had so much more free time to like focus on running that I just wouldn't have in the day now.
I think that having too much free time is not always a good thing, and it's good to
Oh,
be a
well, I
little
agree
bit
with that too.
busy.
That's why I got a job.
Yeah. Well, all right. So I think then a little bit of a hot take. Everyone made a very big deal about, when you're done running, like, the 9 to 5, it's so much like you're not prepared for it. You've kind of just been sitting around like watching Netflix and taking naps and running with your friends all day. Like it's a huge wake up call and it's so much wrong. I think anyone who says that completely disrespects how hard professional runners' lives are and how like much more stressful it is.
But like professional runners say that.
That it's what? That it's hard or that it's easy?
No, that it's easy to have too much free time in the day and they don't do anything.
Yeah, but it's hard in a completely different way. Like the mental grind of working is so monotonous and you just wake up every day and you sit at your desk and you do your tasks. Whereas like running professionally, it's a mental grind and it puts you through the ringer and you have to answer questions about like yourself and life and existential crises constantly. And like you're looking in the mirror and like, what am I worth? Like, what am I doing? Is like, it's a totally different struggle. And the pressure and the stress, whereas like your worst day at work just isn't very bad. Whereas like my worst days running were terrible and everyone watched you fail.
But do you
And
think that's the job that you have? Like, do you think other people just have different jobs that maybe are
maybe,
more
yeah. I
stressful or
mean,
something?
I'm sure there's way more stressful desk jobs out there than what I'm doing. But I just think in general, people don't appreciate how hard the professional life running is because it's very good in some ways. And then in others, like when it's not going well, it's the hardest thing you'll ever do in your life. And
Yeah.
I just, for anyone who thinks like working a desk job is really hard, I like encourage you to spend like 6 months in a pool when you're like knowing that your pay is going to disappear on you really quickly and you're not allowed to do your job when every one of your like coworkers are showing up at the track and doing theirs.
That is actually very true. I guess I haven't really thought about it that much, but that you definitely put it into a good perspective there. I would say like mentally definitely a lot bigger challenge. And like professional runners, you're not making that much money. So it's not like it's disposable income that like goes away when you're injured. It's actual, like you need this income to be able to pay your rent or else you're not gonna be able to pay your rent. So.
Yeah, I don't know which direction you saw this conversation going, but I have a million thoughts on
any direction.
So something that we don't talk about enough, or like when you're a professional runner, your income, like, you know, you obviously have a base salary, which if you're very fortunate is stable enough that, you know, you can always pay rent. But also there's huge variables in how much you're going to make every single year. And you never know what that next paycheck might be like. If it's going to come, I know for me, you know, and this is just coming from my perspective as someone who had dealt with injuries in their career, but like I went from having 1 year in which I made a ton of money extra because I won races and I hit bonuses to then the next, you know, most people, they make money 1 year in a normal job. And they're like, all right, well, I'm going to make even more the next. Whereas I then got hurt. So obviously there's no bonuses or anything. And then I ended up having a huge surgery that cost $15,000 on top of that. And then, you know, then you get cut a little bit more. And it's just like, so what you basically end up doing is just like, just trying to always save and live at like the absolute, like bare minimum, because you don't know, everything's unpredictable.
Yeah. And I think a lot of that happened to people in COVID. Like I knew people that were making a ton of money in 2019. And obviously people were also making like, or expecting to make a lot of money in 2020 because it was the Olympics. There was a bunch of extra prize money going on. And then with all that wiped away, like their income got cut in half.
Yeah. And so.
Yeah. It just, it's like literally crazy. It's so stressful. I can't imagine.
And then on top of that, like the whole thing is, you know, it's your job and you know, obviously like making money is a big part of it, especially if you, you know, are, you know, married or have a family or mortgage, whatever the situation is, then that only obviously complicates things further. But then also is just like the thing you define your entire life by. And it's like the thing you enjoy the most and it's your hobby. And generally when I'm really stressed, it's like my favorite thing to do would be to go for a run. And, you know, if you ever want to get away from work, the way you would normally get away from work is just work. It's like a whole paradox there. Yeah. So I don't know. I loved it. I think it's the best possible way you can spend your 20s, but I also am like very happy it's over.
Yeah. Now you're like, I like stable income and not having that mental stress of having physical performance, like impact your income.
And then also, yeah, I mean, 100%. And then, you know, like just because you're not doing it professionally doesn't mean you don't get to run every day.
Well, exactly. Yeah. I mean, you're still out there trucking and you're still good at running too. You're training for the Under Armour mile too. I've been seeing your workouts.
And that's kind of like the perspective that I think a lot of people lack. And, you know, a football player, they retire and then all of a sudden it's like, all right, well, when am I going to get 50 guys to go to the field and play a football game again? Whereas running, it's like, I just go for a run by myself every day.
Were you burnt out at all, though, when you left the sport? Like, when you decided to retire?
Physically?
Yeah, or just like, yeah, all of the above.
No, physically, I was like, great. I was actually in, I think, some of the best shape that I've ever been in. I was the strongest I'd ever been during COVID. But just mentally, like, I lined up and I'd never dropped out of a track race in my career. And after COVID or like mid COVID, I dropped out of two because I was just like, I don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah. Was there a specific moment in time where you're like, I knew like I need to retire right now?
Well, I'd always said 2020 would be when I retire. And so then obviously COVID complicated that. And then there was just some workouts. And then I think really it was like showing up to a couple of races and just realizing I had no interest in racing anymore. And once I've had this discussion with a few guys who are on the Empire Elite teams, you know, local, still see them for runs and such. And some of the younger guys are like, look, you could still probably run professionally if you wanted. And it's like, yeah, but the problem is once you've run 352 in the mile, you don't want to run 355.
Like, no, it's the satisfaction factor. It's like you won't be satisfied until you're at like your best. That's what I find hardest now is like, I can't imagine like trying as hard as I once did. I mean, granted, I am still pretty young, so who knows down the road, but like, I just can't imagine putting that much effort into it. And then what if I run slower, you know, because my lifestyle is so different.
Yeah. I mean, and if you're just asking those questions, then you're probably not going to run as well as
Okay. Well, that's why I haven't really like tried. That's why I'm not throwing myself into it.
I just think it evolves.
Like, yeah.
Right. Like your relationship with running consistently evolves as you get older, and you'll ebb and flow in and out of it. Like I still have this idea in my head that maybe I'll try to run a marathon and like qualify for the trials or something. Right now I have no urge to do that at all, but I like definitely understand that that's a possibility of like the bug might come back.
Have you run a marathon yet or no?
I just did the New York City virtual last year. Just with some friends. I think I ran like 3:18 with them. I don't know.
Okay.
We did.
Hey,
like,
you did it.
But I did a marathon. But my body was still beat for a couple days after, even though, you know, it was not an all out effort.
Yeah.
But I have this idea in my head that, maybe after I finish this all out mile that I'll go do, I think a fun thing would just say like, all right, let's say I'm just going to leave the house and I'm not going to look at my watch until I think I've run a marathon.
Oh.
And so like, maybe
I do that and it'd be like, you're 11 miles in. I'd be like, seriously?
Yeah. Like you're not allowed to look at pace or anything and you got to go a different route than you normally do. And maybe you run 18 miles, maybe you run like 33 by accident and just see where you end up.
This is like, if any person that doesn't run heard this conversation, they would actually think that you're a psycho.
Yeah. I mean we all are,
who does that for fun? Who's like, let me just go see, like, let me just go guesstimate a marathon right now.
Do you think you'd be able to get close?
I mean, I ran Chicago back in 2019 and it was like very steady, so I feel like I was very in tune with my body. If I was like training, yeah, right now, absolutely not. Like I literally ran like almost 5 miles today and I was dying, so I can't even imagine like I don't even know what getting to 26 would feel like at this moment.
Yeah.
But if I was training, I think I would get like within 2 miles, maybe three. Okay.
Yeah. It'd be fun to try to do not only the distance, but the time. So it's like, pick the time that you think you have to run for.
Yeah.
I don't know.
This I like that. I like that. Maybe I'll try that.
Yeah.
It's like your marathon thing. I'll put it in the back.
Yeah.
It's on the back burner for now, but it seems fun one day. Yeah.
One day if you get bored. Well, so you wake up every day and it's like, how do you decide how far to run now? That's another problem. Like
that is it's very hard.
There's no training plan, no mileage goals, no goals at all.
I know, but like, see, this is my like paradox. It's like, I really like that structure. I like knowing like what exactly I need to do on the day so that I don't have to think about it. And I like someone telling me what to do, but then also having a plan stresses me out because I don't think I'm like healed enough from competitive running to like be able to train for something like day after day after day. So that's like where I'm like trying to figure things out right now. It's like, do I have the plan or does the plan add more stress to my life that's unnecessary? I don't know.
I kind of like, as I've been doing the all out mile training, this idea of like, all right, I'm going to get a workout at some point in the next few days. And then the day that I wake up and the weather is perfect and I feel good, that's the day to go do it. And then those other days when I'm just like sitting on the couch in the morning, drinking coffee and like enjoying my book, that's the day I'm only going to run 4 miles because I'm very content on the couch and I don't want to like,
get off. I don't want to rip my legs right now.
Yeah. So, you know, like the small factors, a week ago I woke up on Sunday morning and I could just, with the window open, it just smelled like cross country outside. So I was like, okay, like we're driving up to like the good trails and we're going to go for a little long run. And it's like,
okay,
things just are made up now, small little factors tweak.
Do you like that? Do you like the freedom to do that?
Yeah, but it's also, I really like it when there's other people involved and mm-hmm. you kind of just like, well, what are you doing? I'll join that. Whereas if you have to do it every day by yourself, it gets a little numbing. Like, I don't know how many options you have where you live, but where I basically, if I run from my house, I can either go left on the trail or right from the trail. And it's just like, is this my life for the forever? I'm just going to wake up in the morning and decide if it's a left day or a right day.
Spice things up every once in a while and go left.
I think I got to get off the trail every now and then.
Yeah, maybe you got to. Well, you just drove somewhere for a workout. So yeah. You're spicing it up. A quick word from our sponsor, Green Chef. You guys know I love Green Chef. You probably already know what it is because I talk about it so much and how much I love it. Green Chef is the first USDA certified organic meal kit company. They make eating well, easy, and affordable with plans to fit every kind of lifestyle. So whether you're keto, paleo, vegan, vegetarian, or you're just looking to eat healthier like me, there's a range of recipes to suit any kind of diet or preference. Green Chef's expert chefs curate every single recipe and with over 30 meal choices every week and the flexibility to switch between plans, you'll never have to sacrifice taste for nutrition. You can enjoy restaurant quality dishes in the comfort of your own home. And when they say restaurant quality, they mean it. Green Chef is absolutely fire. I love every single recipe that I've ever made from them, and it's super easy, and they literally take less than 30 minutes, which is very applicable to this episode because I am so busy these days, whether it's like recording this podcast, doing my full 9-to-5, working out, or like doing other aspects of like the social media stuff, or working on crazy food stuff. Having that 30-minute dinner is absolutely incredible. Like, Green Chef's meals are so straightforward, but they're so flavorful, and I cannot believe that. It literally only takes 30 minutes to cook. Literally, if you haven't tried Green Chef yet, you have to go do it because you will not regret it. It's literally one of my favorite things that I incorporate into my weekly routine. If you guys are interested, go to greenchef.com/coldbrew100 and use code coldbrew100 to get $100 off, including free shipping. That is greenchef.com/coldbrew100 and use code coldbrew100 to get $100 off, including free shipping. Now let's get back into the episode. What do you think that, so you started at 426.
Yeah, I think I dogged it for being
okay. Okay. Yeah. See, I didn't, but what do you think now that you can run and when are you going to do it? Are you going to do it October 11th? Or are you doing it like tomorrow?
I think I'm going to wait till October 11th. I have like one or two more workouts I'd really like to do. Cause I've just been doing the workouts I like doing, not necessarily.
Yeah, I was like, how are you coming up with workouts?
I just show up to the track and it's like, what do I enjoy? I don't enjoy mile training that much anymore, but I know that I need to go rip a couple mile workouts. And I think I can, in like, I would say I'm going to be in 405 shape.
That is so wild to me.
I don't know if I'll run 405. We'll see. But I think I'll be around, throw me on like the BU track and I think I would have a 405.
The fact that you're just casually training and you can still run 405 is just, it's mesmerizing. It's cool. Well,
I'm not that far removed though. And I haven't taken a day off from exercising since I retired. I'll either run or bike every day.
Whoa. Okay. Yeah. I have seen you biking a lot. That's cool. Yeah. Do you like that? Do you like just like the switch up from running?
Yeah. I know you bike a lot and I think that's a very natural progression for all runners to eventually figure it out. But I feel this way with running too. Like, I really like going for runs by myself or bike rides by myself. But after about like 60 minutes alone, it's just like, I don't need any more alone time. So happy to go for long bike rides with people, but by myself, like 20 miles is generally 20 to 30 miles alone is enough. Once or twice.
I agree with that. I think especially coming from running, when you're like done after 90 minutes, you know, it's the long run. It's like, you don't want to spend 3 hours on a bike because it just takes up a lot of your day.
Yeah.
And even though I guess it's not as like hard on the body, but it just doesn't, it's just long. It just gets really boring.
Well, the other thing, like running, I'm okay with doing the same route all the time, but biking, you have to explore.
Really? I just bike up and down the coast.
Okay. Well, that's pretty nice.
There's a straight line.
Yeah. I find with biking, I get a little bit more itch of like finding new spots.
Yeah.
Whereas running, I just go left or right.
Yeah. That makes sense. Yeah. I mean, cycling's interesting because I feel like the people are very similar, but then they're also very different. Like, do you have cyclist friends or are they just people that are?
I do have some cyclist friends, but not like die-hard racing cyclist friends, more like people who've found it.
Yeah. I just bike with a group of guys, and they just have, like, the equipment is so expensive. They have, like, $5,000 bikes, and yeah, they just, like, talk about all these, like, things that I have no idea what they're talking about. I'm like, this is just so – it's, like, so similar because it's endurance, but it's just so different because it's just different.
Yeah. It kind of gives you an appreciation for running in the sense
that – Yeah, I'm like, I like it being simple. I like the simple things in life.
Runners are so cheap, too. Like, I think it's because we all got free stuff in college. So, like, the idea of ever buying a pair of shoes is, like, terrifying to most of us. Or, like, you know – If you had like three pairs of shorts and they're all ripped and falling apart, like the idea that you would go buy another pair of shorts, it's just like, why? I would just keep wearing the ripped one with holes. And so like very different mindset from cyclists who see someone else like beat them up the hill. And it's like, well, I guess I got to get a new $10,000 bike.
Yeah, that's actually so true. Have you had to buy a pair of running shoes yet or no?
No, I hope. I mean, I do have a closet full of them still. I was stacking up from when I was sponsored. And then also, like, just I've done enough in the sport still.
Networking, too.
I still have a lot of friends who are sponsored or at companies and just have been able to still stay affiliated through other means with a lot of brands out there. It's been really fun being a little bit of a free agent.
Yeah, I'm surprised that you didn't go into like a running career. Yeah, you are like, you're a big figure in running. So when you said that you're getting like a normal job, what is your job, by the way?
Yeah, so I work for American Express. I do marketing and partnerships, and so, and I love it. Like it's great, and I really like doing something totally separate from the sport. I think it made the transition a lot easier to, instead of, you know, on the track to holding the stopwatch, like that would be, I think, mentally a little bit more difficult. It was my job for so long. And so it's really nice to have it as a hobby now. And that was mm-hmm. the goal. And so I like having the separation. And then also I think, because I did initially explore, you know, jobs in the running world, but two things, it was like a pandemic. And the other was that shockingly, people, even at running companies and like fitness companies, don't really respect the experience of like what professional athletes bring to the table.
Really?
Yeah, they don't.
I feel like
care.
The running world is so small that it's like, and you, I feel like you have just been a figure for so long that you would expect someone to be like, hey, come work.
Yeah, the people hiring are different than the people then, like, you know, trying to convince like someone who isn't necessarily in that world, like they want to see the hard skills. And so, yeah, they're just the combination of the two. And so I'm really happy to be working in a capacity in which I also still get to dip, like I have a good enough work-life balance. And because I'm not working for, you know, a specific brand, I actually get to do a ton more.
Yeah. I'm curious with the lap count. Why did you start that? I feel like just a running newsletter. I don't know anything about newsletters.
Yeah.
So I was very intrigued, and I don't subscribe to any except for yours. So
thank you. Well, I appreciate that. Yeah. So the lap count started basically like as soon as I started my job, because I wanted a way to still, for years, I like to think I worked to cultivate some level of a voice and following in the sport that I think is for the most part a positive one. And I see a lot of opportunity to further amplify the stories and the voices in our sport of like the athletes specifically. And I have this, you know, mantra that like you should leave the sport better than you found it, as like a Boy Scout would. And I just saw the opportunity to give another platform to athletes and storytelling. I think that one of the most difficult aspects of our sport is that you don't know where to find things, like what's happening. And if you're not in it, if you're not like fully in the sport, there's so much going on, and it's not like a concise season of like, you know, game one, game two, game three. It's just like things are happening all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to be an aggregator in a way. So, you know, for people who like the sport but don't know where to begin to follow it, it's like, well, here's a newsletter in your inbox every Wednesday that tells you everything that happened and everything that's going to happen.
Where's your favorite place to get running news?
Twitter.
Twitter?
I think Twitter is like brilliant for it. If you follow the right
random people like talking about stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, running Twitter is like a really funny world in which I feel like there's 50 people just kind of yelling at each other all the time.
It's so funny. I love it. I'm just eating my popcorn.
Yeah. It's the Wild West out there. Just everyone taking turns getting mad at each other, but also at the same time sharing. And, I think like if you have like a niche hobby, I think Twitter is like the ultimate news source.
That is so funny. I remember, you're not going to remember this probably. I remember the first time I think I ever met you in person. We didn't even meet. It was at USA's in 2019. We were at the Tipsy Crow or wherever that bar was in Des Moines.
Yeah.
And you and Pat Casey were standing next to each other. And I walked up to you guys and I was like, oh my gosh, like I love, or like you guys are my favorite like Twitter people. And then you guys like both looked at each other and you're like, wow, like that's all we get credit for is like being funny on Twitter. Or like, I don't know. It was just, but then it just like solidified the funniness of your like Twitter. Like when I think of running Twitter, I think of you and Pat Casey. And then there's like other people talking about like, I don't know, other training stuff or whatever. But then you and Pat Casey are like the personalities.
Thanks. Yeah. There's a lot going on. I think that there aren't enough athletes who are properly utilizing Twitter because it really is like such a cool way to connect with fans directly. And I feel like there's way less pressure on throwing out a tweet than there is in Instagram. Like people really put their efforts into an Instagram, whereas like Twitter, you can just fire from the hip. Like,
yeah, but you have to be like funny.
You just like have to
your
be...
tweets are so clever. Every time I see one of your tweets, it's funny. And I'm like, I see for someone that I do social media, but Twitter, I can't be clever that much.
Just whenever you say something funny in real life and someone laughs, just put it in words.
Just out of the drafts and start firing them off.
It's more or less how it goes.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, but I guess, you know, you see it from the lab count. Like I like writing. And so, I guess Twitter is one medium for that.
Yeah. Where do you see yourself like taking the lap count? Do you want to keep it as a newsletter or do you want to expand?
Yeah. I keep telling Chris Chavez that Sidious should buy me, but, I don't think he has the funds yet.
Expensive. Okay.
Yeah. Or poor. one or the other. But yeah, I mean, right now it's so, but as far as like, and you're, I guess I hate this term, but like you're a creator, and something that I think a lot of creators struggle with is the sustainability of doing stuff. Like people come out of the gates really hot. It's like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do a video every single day. And it's like by day 8, you're out of ideas.
Yeah.
And, I think the once a week format that is the lap count right now is just, I can do that for a very long time. And there's like the perfect amount of content every week to digest and write about and put out there. And so for right now, I'm just really happy with the newsletter. I just hope it continues to grow. And because I think to the subscribers and the readers that I have, I can almost guarantee you that they are much better educated about the sport now than they were 30 weeks ago.
Yeah. I mean, I know I am because I don't go on Twitter that much and I don't read any running news websites. So the only way I get my news sources from, or my news is from my group text, and that's not very helpful. So
that's where I can come in, and it's, you know, and then also in another part of the newsletter, and it was an idea I had, and I was really, I knew it would be a lot of work and I didn't want to take it on, but I really wanted to do it, and so I outsourced it to Mac Fleet, a friend. And so we do a second newsletter on Friday called the Victory Lap, and what that is it's like our premium newsletter, and it's an athlete interview every week, and it's just like an opportunity to highlight professional runners, like who's got a cool story, And then it's paid, like, you know, it's $5 a month or $40 for the year to subscribe, but all of the proceeds go to those athletes.
Yeah.
So at this point, we've raised like over $12,000 to just give back to athletes. So that's something I'm really proud of. I think it's like making a small little dent in the greater funding issue.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely is. Like, and I think it, you just have such a good perspective, like being a professional athlete yourself. So I think you being able to do that for other athletes, like they probably really appreciate that.
Yeah. And, you know, people love the format of just getting a written interview of someone. Like I listen to podcasts, but not everyone has time to listen to an hour podcast. But most people have 5 minutes to read about someone's story. And so just amplifying those stories is cool. I don't know. I grew up reading the interviews of, like, there's some old websites. Like there's one called Track Shark, which maybe before your time, but that was like,
I'm not familiar.
They would just highlight an athlete each week and just crush an interview. And it was, you know, appointment internet.
What I also think that people like nowadays is like the younger voices that are coming to track and field. Like it's just a fresher take. And I think people really saw that with yours and Chris's commentary over the last year.
Yeah. Because
like, the Austin meet, the Trials of Miles Austin meet, like the feedback that you guys got from that was incredible.
Yeah. I don't even like doing commentary.
Yeah. I was going to ask you about that. Like, what was like your favorite part, and what was something that you found like challenging about actually like live commentating a race?
Yeah, it's really difficult to do. It's difficult to speak for many hours. And then it's really difficult when races aren't exciting, you know, like if a race isn't exciting and you have to talk about it for 15, 20 minutes, whatever, it's like, that's really difficult. Especially, you know, a one-off invitational that doesn't have huge stakes necessarily. But the thing I did like is, like, we know the athletes and we know the stories. And so there's an opportunity there to just like connect the fans with the athletes. Like, we're the middlemen. We know the stories, like, here they are. And so that part I love, because if you know why someone is worth rooting for, then you'll root for them. And you just have to, you know, make that apparent to everyone.
Yeah. And I feel like, well, just social media isn't very big in the running world. So it's like, people don't know anything about anyone really, unless the athlete actually like puts in the effort to do something, which is a lot of effort on top of training. So I don't blame them for not wanting to do that, but yeah. I think it's just cool to be able to like, I mean, what you're doing with the lap count, and then also just being able to like showcase people's personalities or just like something behind the person racing, like you did with Eric Holt. Like,
yeah,
like
yeah.
That just Holt mania, like that just became a whole thing because of you guys. So
but then you'll root for it, right?
Yeah, exactly. And everyone was rooting for him.
I just, it is, not everyone is built in such a way. Like, it's easy for, you know, you to be in front of the camera and just talk, and like you have no problem putting yourself out there. But for so many people, that's not their personality.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to really put themselves, you have to like force some people into the position where it's like, please, like, I know you have a story, like share it, but not everyone's willing to. And so I almost wish that more elite athletes had someone managing their social media, or at least like consulting or advising or something.
Yeah.
And just like pay a little bit, and all of a sudden, like, you'll have
the opportunity, the opportunity that these people can have if they have someone like, I mean, not that you need to like do the whole 10 man elite thing where you have a whole team like filming and photographing you every day, but just having someone like manage your social media.
Just consistency.
There's just so many opportunities that can be presented.
Yeah.
But it's hard to also convince someone of that, like to spend the money that's already very minimal to like do that, because a lot of the time you're not seeing like the direct, I guess, gains from it.
Yeah. Yeah. We're also in like this very in between spot in the sport where it's like very ambiguous whether or not the social media really matters in terms of money yet. You know, it's like, is it performance or social media? Is, you know, that's the debate. And
it the depends, Twitter debate. I see that every day.
It depends who you ask, though. there is definitely opportunities if you do have a good enough following to make more money, and it sucks, but like that's what motivates people is the money.
Yeah. And like, I'm not even talking about in terms of like brand negotiation perspective, like you're looking for a big contract or something. I mean, obviously that plays into it, but I'm talking about like someone like the athlete special who didn't like, wouldn't get a contract out of college, like is now able to sustain himself probably better than a lot of like actual professional runners are because he has his own social media platform. Like that's what I kind of like want to get across to a lot of people. But again, like you said, it's hard for, like, I'm not expecting everyone to want to pick up the camera and start filming. So I'll be like, what's up, everyone? Welcome to my YouTube channel. You know, it's like,
yeah, I don't know. No, it's, I mean, that's also like the top 1% in a way of like, not everyone's going to be able to do that. But even if you just like, even if you're just telling people how your training is going and how your races are and when you're racing as like a bare minimum, then like there's enough people who are interested in that, that, at the very least, like, you know, you'll pick up enough, small appearance fees for having like a extra few thousand Instagram followers that maybe it pays for itself. But it's, if, again, if it's not your personality, it's really tough to convince people to do it.
Yeah. I worked for a track agent, and basically that's what I was trying to do, is convince people to like put effort into their social media. And these people are also a little bit older. So they weren't like really that familiar with social media, and it was impossible.
Yeah. Well, also agents, it's kind of shocking that agents don't help more with that side of things, or brands. Like, it's really just up to the individual if this is going to be something you want to do.
Yeah. It's very interesting, but it is changing a lot. So we'll see, maybe things will become different. I don't know.
Do you ever look back on things that you posted in the past and just think like, I can't believe, like, why would I post that video?
I mean, honestly, no, because I feel like I've just always been an open book.
Okay.
So I don't really have any regrets of anything I've posted. I mean, I overshare, which is like something that I need to learn how to not do. Like, I just need to kind of shut my mouth sometimes and like think to myself and like keep things, parts of my life, private. But I'm like the opposite of a lot of people. I'm just like, anyone can know anything about me, you know?
Yeah.
So I think I just overshare things. And then I also overcommit to everything. So like that on the internet is really bad, because then I promise people things that I can't deliver. Cause I like what you're doing with the lap count, and you're just committing to that every week, and you're not like getting ahead in like, or ahead of yourself in terms of like content and everything. I'm so bad at that. I'm like, okay, yeah, like I'm gonna do this with the podcast, I'm gonna do this with the YouTube, and I have a full-time job now, like I'm just gonna do all this. And then I tell everyone on the internet, and then I'm like, oh wait, now that I'm actually like trying to do it all, it's not gonna happen. So yeah, those are things I regret, like oversharing, and I'm still learning.
Yeah, it's generally easier to like tell people once you've already done things versus like what I'm gonna do.
Mm-hmm.
But also, like, I don't know, if you're really enthusiastic about something, you don't think that far in advance. You just like want to do it. And I don't know, it's not a bad thing. And then you'll see what sticks. And I mean, you're really consistent on this podcast and the YouTube videos, right? Like,
yeah,
so
YouTube, you figured honestly, it out. Not really, but like, I mean, I haven't been away for like months from YouTube, but yeah, the podcast, I haven't missed an episode. So
yeah.
And that's something I knew was like really important. Like YouTube, it's like, it's good to get on a schedule, but you don't like need to, but the podcast, you like need to have a schedule. So
yeah. Is it, like, I think that for the newsletter is really important. It's like every Wednesday at 6:30, it's going to be there. Like, yeah.
It's the same type of thing. And now like it's gotten so much to the podcast. Like I used to sometimes like record on Thursdays and then post the same day. And I was like, okay, no, I need to like schedule a little bit in advance. And then now I'm trying to post like every Thursday at 6 a.m. Pacific time. So that, like, I mean, not that everyone's going to like open their phones and be like, let me listen to this hour long thing at 6 in the morning. But at least like it holds me accountable, I think, now.
Well, how many podcasts do you personally listen to?
One a week, maybe. I'm not really a big podcast listener.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah.
And I don't really listen to any running podcasts. It's just like, honestly, when I like am in the podcast mood, I do it, but it's very rare.
Why do you think people listen to your podcast?
I don't know. I don't know why people even follow me at this point. I'm just kidding. But no, I think people just like open conversation. I don't know. I have like, this is a running podcast. It's not really how I wanted it to start. Like, but then I also just solidify myself in it because I don't go out of my circle, and my circle is runners. So all the guests I have on are runners. So now it is a running podcast. But I think people just like different type of like podcast recording where it's just like a conversation, and the people that I have on usually like I know them really well, so it like really you can really get to know their personality because it's just different than like, oh, you ran this Diamond League race, like tell me about it. Like maybe it's just, I don't know, it's just like a little bit different, more insight into who the person actually is.
I think as we're just I've listened to, you know, a few episodes of yours. I don't want to listen every week.
That's
no
offense. Fine. That's fine.
But I've listened to a few. And also obviously just talking now, I think the thing that you do really well is it's a two-way conversation versus question, answer. And I think that's something that a lot of people fall into the trap of, like you ask the question and then you don't listen.
Yeah.
Or not you, but others. Like, and I don't like Joe Rogan especially anymore. I think he dropped the ball this year big time. Early Joe Rogan, that's what he was really good at, was just the two-way conversation.
Yeah, I think it makes it easier because I do know the other person. Like the times I bring on people I don't know as well, it's definitely like it gets a little bit more uncomfortable in that, like, this person has no idea who I am. Like, why am I even replying to their their answer, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's just an interesting dynamic. Like I can see why people are that, like, it's kind of like a one-sided conversation. Cause if you don't know the other person, it's really awkward and like, they don't really care about your side of the story. But that's what I think, like, that's why I like my inner circle. Cause it just makes it really easy and flows a lot better.
I also think that you speak at a pretty quick cadence. And I know personally when people talk too slow in podcasts, I hate it.
Really? Okay, maybe that's it. You just talk really fast.
I think it's good though. You know, you want the quick back and forth. And then also no one should ever speak for like 5 minutes interrupted on podcasts. I think that's terrible.
No, I agree. That's why if people are going on too long, I like interrupt. It's kind of awkward. I've gotten better honestly at letting people speak. At the beginning, I feel like I interrupted too much, but now I feel like I have like a better rhythm of interrupting people when they've gone on for too long or they're like going on a tangent. I'm like, okay, let's bring it back.
Would you be a talker on runs as well, or
I mean,
just keep it for podcasts?
this is only for my podcast. I actually don't talk in person. No, I think I was a talker on runs. Like I'm always the person that's like making a joke or some self-deprecating jokes. I don't know.
Yeah,
but also like when I think back to college, I feel like I was always in the back because everyone was like sprinting, so wasn't really talking much. But normally, yeah, I'm like a talker. I like to talk to people.
Yeah. Some people don't talk when they run. And I think like the perfect amount of people to go on a run for a talk is, or sorry, perfect like group size is 4 people on a run. And that's when the conversation is the best. And if you get too big or any bigger than that, then it really falls off.
Yeah. A 4. Okay. I was thinking 3 because then you have like, you have the person to the side of you and then you have the person in the back that's like, like, let me get in on this conversation.
Yeah.
And like, adding their little input. 4, it's like you could have 2 people in the front having the conversation. The 2 people in the back could be having the conversation.
Maybe. Okay. I hear
that. Unless you're weird and then you're running 4 wide and then no one can hear each other.
Yeah. All right. I'll maybe buy into 3.
Yeah.
I think a silent 4th who just comes in every now and then.
adds something.
Yeah.
Flavor to the conversation.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to put that to the test here soon. I'll get back to you on that.
I haven't run with that many people in forever.
Yeah, I'm like thinking back to the last time I ran with 3 other people. I'm like, it's been too long. I can't keep up anymore. Before this podcast gets too long, I want to answer some listener questions that we got because people came flooding in.
Did we?
We got a decent amount. We're not going to go through all of them, but we'll have some. We've got
embarrassing if no one did.
Yeah, 0 people actually. I had to make these up myself. Who is your favorite athlete named David Rivich?
Oh my God, it would have to be Josh Kerr.
Okay.
Yeah.
Actually, what I was thinking that you were going to say. So good answer. What do you think this sport needs more of?
What does this sport need more of? I think it's got to be both simpler and more complicated. So I think like it's got to be easier to follow. But then also, I think when it's happening, we have to make it more complicated and we have to like lean into the nicheness of it rather than trying to dumb it down.
Okay. Yeah. I like that answer.
And money. We need more money.
Yeah, we definitely need more money in the sport. That would probably make things a little easier. What's your favorite thing about the elite running world?
I think just like the fact that everyone is just a pretty normal person and like friends. I think like having been in it, you just meet a lot of really cool people. I mean, some people, you know.
Some people suck.
Not suck, but some people are there just to run and, you know, but there is definitely like a group of people who you make lifelong friendships with. And it's, I think most elite athletes are just normal people who ended up being good at something. They're not any different.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I also just like how small it is. Everyone knows everything, which is like good and bad, but it just makes for like a nice little like community and everyone knows what's going on at all times. It's kind of fun to talk about it.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. What is the best bagel place to get an egg sandwich in Long Island?
I mean like Bagel Boss, maybe I've probably had more, egg sandwiches here in Westchester now. Hastings own bagel right down the street from me. Pretty great.
Do you think like New York bagels are the best bagels around?
I do. Yeah, I do.
I don't really get what makes them that different. Like they're just like fluffier or?
They say the water. I think honestly, it's the freshness that I think is a big factor. Like we are constantly churning out bagels because the demand is so high. So you can walk into like any bagel shop on any morning and you'll get something that came out of the oven, like within 15 minutes.
That definitely makes sense. When I was in New York, I had more bagels like within those couple months than I had in like the last probably 10 years combined.
Yeah. Also egg bagels.
Like, yeah. It was like, it was egg sandwiches, bacon, egg.
No. Egg bagels.
Egg bagels.
See, you don't, one of those. Okay. So that's the thing is like, for some reason outside like the New York area, no one gets egg bagels. And I think that's the best flavor.
Do they taste like egg?
They're just like a sweeter, like kind of buttery. It's like a yellow tinted plain bagel. But if you ever see the everything egg bagel, that's what you want.
Okay. Next time I make my way back there, I'm going to get that. I'm going to put it to the test.
I don't know why it hasn't like made it to other sides of the country with egg bagel.
I don't know. Cause an egg flavored bagel doesn't sound very good, but then you put eggs on like a regular bagel and it sounds fine. So just combine them both. That, I mean, it makes sense logically. We'll see. We'll see when it makes, I'll let you know when it hits San Diego, but it has not yet. So
someone's going to like DM and let you know what's up.
Yeah, they're going to be like, actually, my shop has sold egg bagels for 10 years.
Or, you'll have to try it.
Yeah. I'm like, okay, say less. All right, the last question I have. Do you have any advice to your younger self?
Ooh, advice? How young?
However young you'd like.
Advice to my younger self. I wish I would have traveled even more when I was running. And I did a good bit. I traveled around. I raced in many countries. I wish I did it even more. I almost wish that was a priority at times because it's just the best possible way to see the world. And there is some opportunities I had in which it's like, no, I'm tired. I'm going to go home and train for a little, or no, it doesn't make sense in the season. It's like, man, why did I not go to that race in Sweden? I've never been to Sweden. Like I'd like to go. And I could have, and I chose not to. So like things like that.
Where was your favorite place to go?
I did a race in Japan and I thought it was like the coolest. They took such amazing care of us and like really, they really brought us in and showed us the culture. And, you know, I think that was one of the best experiences I've ever had.
Japan, that Carissa came back from Tokyo and she said the same thing. Basically, like, the Japanese people were just so amazing. But yeah, they didn't, like, get to see actual Japan, which kind of sucks. But
yeah, so I raced,
they put on a phenomenal event.
I raced in Izumo, which is, like, not a touristy place. Very, you wouldn't see many Americans walking around. And, like, that was a huge culture shock in the best way.
Yeah, I mean, it's cool. At least you got to do it for a little bit. You can always go back to Sweden if you'd like.
Yeah, but now you'll have to, like, pay for it.
Yeah, that is that is the bummer about it. Okay, well, thank you for coming on. This was very insightful. I really like talking to people that have retired from running, just to get their, like, little input. I feel like I don't really know how many people that have been on that have been retired. A lot of them are still current.
Yeah. And well, I hope your listeners don't get any ideas.
No. See, like, it needs to balance out. There's so many people that are still running, but then there's people like me who graduated from college and they're not running anymore. So it's always nice to get a different perspective. And obviously you had a great experience running pro too.
Yeah. I think you can stop competing, but you should never stop running. And I'm a big believer in that. And I think you take a long break and you got to really work to get back. But if you never stop, you know, you can stay in decent shape.
Yeah, I took the long break and now I'm like, ooh.
You regret it, probably.
I regret it. I'm like,
you could have done a few extra 30-minute runs in there and probably feel a lot better.
Yep, probably, but yeah, we're on the journey back and we'll get there eventually. Well, where can people follow you at? Where can they subscribe to The Lap Count?
Yeah, I mean, thelapcount.com in your inbox every Wednesday morning. And then, I mean, that's the only thing I actually care about. You follow me on Twitter and Instagram, but that doesn't matter to me. Just the newsletter.
Okay, sounds good. thanks for coming on. To close out the episode, can we get a good old peace out, fellas?
Peace out, fellas.
Thank you guys so much for listening to today's episode of Combos Over Cold Brew. I hope you enjoyed it. It was fun talking to Kyle. I honestly feel like we had some differing opinions on life after competitive running. So it's always so fun to hear people's different perspectives of life after, I guess, sport. And it was really fun to talk to him. Don't forget to subscribe to The Lap Count. Seriously, it's literally the only news I ever read about running is when that thing comes in my mailbox every Wednesday. So go check it out. I'll leave a link in the description, or just go to thelapcount.com and you can go subscribe there. It's free. Don't forget to rate and review on Apple Podcasts if you love the show. It really helps me out a lot. And follow us on Instagram at @combsovercoldbrewpod if you want to be up to date or submit listener questions. Appreciate you guys so much, and I will hear from you all in the next one. Peace out, fellas.